A short, curly-haired blonde pulls out her phone and shows me a sleek, mermaid-style dress hanging on a mannequin. Covered with delicate lace, it's strapless with a square neckline and a row of pearl buttons in the back. Simple, yet so perfect that I can only stare and drool. "We have many other styles as well," Susie says, incorrectly interpreting my speechlessness. "Is there anything specific that you'd..." "No, this is great." I tear my gaze away from the phone screen. "How much is it?" Susie blinks and glances at Pam. "Mr. Guerin told us there is no set budget," Pam says carefully. "Is that not the case?"
Oh, sure. I'm just asking out of curiosity."
Finances is yet another thing I haven't discussed with Peter, so I do my best to hide my discomfort behind a brighter smile.
"Oh, I see." Pam beams back at me. "Well, rest assured your fiancé is a very generous man. This dress is a one-of-a-kind runway edition with handmade lace, and it retails for $33,000 plus tax. We're throwing in the alterations for free, though."
"That's very nice of you." My voice sounds choked, but I can't help it. I'm no Cinderella. Even after the pay cut at my new job, my salary is solidly in the six figures. But $33,000 is still an eye-popping sum for a dress I'll wear exactly once. I thought the $1,200 dress at my first wedding was expensive.
"You'll need shoes and accessories as well," Susie says, pulling a shiny catalog out of her oversized handbag. "Do you want to flip through this?"
She holds up the catalog. "Or would you rather we recommend something?"
"I'd appreciate a recommendation," I say, and they swiftly find me a pair of white Louboutin pumps with delicate straps around the ankles, and a pearl necklace to go along with two pearl and diamond studs for my hair.
"You're going to want an updo, of course," Pam says, flipping through the catalog to point at a few intricate hairstyles on the models. "It's going to really bring it all together."
"Thank you. I'll be sure to do that," I say, as they pack up and head out. True to their word, the whole process took just under 30 minutes, a fraction of the time I spent shopping for a dress and accessories for my first wedding. Maybe there's some benefit to Peter railroading me like this, I think wryly, as I step out to grab a quick lunch in the half hour I have left before my next patient. My first wedding was a big production, with George inviting everyone we knew and spending money we didn't really have. We had 200 people at the reception, and it took a year to plan. And I, swamped with residency at the time, hated every minute of that planning. A small wedding, where all I have to do is show up, might be exactly up my alley.
"Who were those people?" the office receptionist, Annabelle, asks when I return from lunch, and I take a breath, realizing I do have one important task on my plate. I have to invite my friends and colleagues, enduring their surprised questions in the process.
"They were here to measure me for a dress," I say, deciding there's no time like the present. Slipping my left hand into my bag, I surreptitiously put on my ring and take my hand out, displaying the large diamond to Annabelle. "You see, I'm engaged, and the wedding is..." An excited squeal drowns out my words before I can say, "This Saturday." Annabelle, a no-nonsense woman in her late 50s, who handles insurance companies and difficult patients with equal aplomb, jumps to her feet as spryly as a teen and grabs my hand to gape at the ring, chattering the whole time.
"Oh my God, look at that ruck. Who's the lucky guy? How did you meet him? I didn't even know you were dating."
When she pauses for breath, I tell her that Peter and I have been dating on and off for some time, but that our relationship wasn't serious because of his job, which required a lot of travel abroad. Now, however, he's going to be doing something else, so we decided to take the next step and got engaged.
"We're not planning a big wedding," I say, before she can launch into the next set of questions. "Instead, we're going to have a small ceremony this Saturday, and I would love it if you and your husband could attend. I know it's short notice, but..."
She squeals again and hugs me.
"Oh, thank you, honey. I'm so honored. We'll definitely be there. Did you already tell Bill and Wendy?"
I grin at her excited face.
"No, I'm about to."
"Oh, then go do that. Right now. I can't wait to see the look on Bill's face when he finds out I was right."
At my raised eyebrows, she explains. I bet him 20 bucks that a pretty girl like you must have a boyfriend. And as I burst out laughing, she sticks her head out to the waiting area and says, I don't see your patient yet, so you have a couple of minutes. Thanks, Annabelle. I laugh as she makes shooing motions with her hands. I'm going, I promise. I hurry to my boss's office before Annabelle can physically drag me there and knock on the door. Wendy? Bill? Do you guys have a second? Wendy opens the door a second later.
Of course, my dear. How can I help you?
Her smile is as soft as the white hair, puffing out around her kind face. Everything about the female Dr. Otterman is kind, from the gentle tone of her voice to the way she regularly calls her patients to check up on them. Working with her is an absolute pleasure, even with her grouchy husband always at her side. Is Bill here? I ask, then see him sitting behind her, chowing down on a sandwich nearly as big as his mustache. He gives me his customary glare and puts down the sandwich.
What is it?
If I didn't know better, I think he hates me. But he's like this with everyone, patients included, so I don't take it personally. According to the nurses, the more he glowers at you, the more he likes you. Well, out of the corner of my eye, I see Annabelle come up and stand next to me. She clearly can't resist seeing the aforementioned look on Bill's face firsthand. I was wondering if you guys have plans this Saturday, I say, figuring it's best not to make a big deal of it. I'm getting married in a small, low-key ceremony, and...
You what?
Bill's grizzled mustache quivers as his gaze falls to my left hand.
You're engaged.
As of yesterday, I say, lifting my hand to display the ring. I know it's short notice, so if you have other plans, it's totally...
Oh, no. We'll be there, my dear. Congratulations.
Wendy beams at me and reaches up to squeeze my right hand.
Who's the lucky gentleman?
She peers at my left hand.
That's a beautiful ring he gave you.
Bill's mustache refuses to stop moving.
You have a boyfriend?
His glower deepens as he gets to his feet.
We didn't know you had a boyfriend.
I smile and repeat my explanation about us being on and off, and Peter traveling a lot before. So now we're ready to take the next step, I conclude, and glance up at the clock on the wall. Oh, look at that. My patient is probably here now, I say, and watch as grinning Annabelle hurries back to her post. Sorry, I have to run, I tell my bosses. So you'll be there?
With bells and whistles on,
Bill says sourly. I take that to mean he's happy for me as well, and with a cheerful wave at Wendy, I hurry off, pleased that this part of my task, at least, went off without a hitch. Now I just have to tell everyone else, and then explain it to my parents. I have an appointment cancellation in the second half of the afternoon, so I use that time to start making the necessary calls. Simon and Rory don't pick up, so I leave them a voicemail to call me. Phil, however, must already be done with his workday at school, because he picks up on the first ring.
Hey, there you are. We thought your mystery boyfriend might have carried you off,
he says, and I laugh, hoping he can't hear the semi-hysterical note in the sound. He's joking, but Peter could have easily made me disappear. That's what I thought was going to happen when I left the bar with him. Still here, I say when I stop laughing. But I do have some news.
Don't tell me.
Phil mock gasps into the phone.
You're preggers.
No. Or at least if I am, I don't know it yet. It's not impossible after 2 days of unprotected sex, but it's definitely too soon to tell. I am getting married, though. There's dead silence on the phone. Then...
What?
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, I say, and launch into the same explanation I gave my coworkers about my on-and-off relationship and Peter's travels.
But why didn't you tell us about him?
Phil still sounds stunned.
We all thought you didn't date because of your husband.
It was a bit complicated at times, and since I wasn't sure it was going anywhere, I trail off, hoping Phil fills in the blanks on his own. In any case, we are getting married, and it's happening this Saturday, so...
What?
I grin, picturing his bulging eyes. Yes, I know. We decided against a long engagement. In any case, I know it's super short notice, so if you have other plans this Saturday, I completely understand. But if you can make it, we'd love to have you there. And obviously you're welcome to bring a date.
You're getting married. This Saturday.
That's what I just said. I pause to give him a chance to emote more, but he seems to have lost his tongue, so I plow ahead. You don't have to tell me right now, but if you get the chance, I'd love to know by tomorrow if you'd be able to attend. Peter booked a catering company and everything, so it's going to be small, but hopefully nice.
Where?
Phil clears his throat.
Where is the wedding going to be?
At Silver Lake Country Club, I say. You know it?
Yes, of course. My cousin got married there a couple of years ago. Beautiful spot.
Oh, good. I smile, though he can't see it. So can you tell me if you'll be there? Or do you need until tomorrow?
Are you kidding me? Of course I'll be there. Did you already tell Rory and Simon?
Left them voicemails, I say, and look up at the clock. I better hurry if I'm to call Marcia before my next patient. Thanks a lot, Phil. And sorry to spring this on you, I tell him. See you Saturday.
Yeah, see you,
he says, still sounding stunned as I hang up. Marcia is next on my list, and it's a conversation I'm dreading nearly as much as the upcoming dinner with my parents. As I dial her number, I'm half hoping she doesn't pick up, but she grabs the phone on the first ring. Hey, hon. I take a deep breath. Hey, Marcia. How's it going?
You know. Just about to head in for my evening shift. Andy pulled the short straw this week, but her boyfriend threw a hissy fit because it's their anniversary today, so she asked me to swap with her. How's it going with you? What are you up to this weekend? Tanya and I were going to hit up a couple of bars on Saturday. Want to join us? You don't have a performance, do you?
No, but actually, about this Saturday. I grip the phone tighter. I have some news.
Oh?
There's a guy I've been seeing for a while. Kind of on and off.
Really?
Marcia's voice perks up.
Who? Not that red-headed bodybuilder from your band, is it?
Rory? No, not at all.
Oh, good. Because Tanya really liked him, and I thought it might be mutual.
Who, then? Have I met him? No, you haven't. I take another deep breath. It's gotten very serious between us, though.
Really?
Her interest level is clearly spiking.
Serious how?
I brace myself and rattle out. We're getting married this Saturday.
You're what?
The cat is out of the bag, so I repeat as calmly as I can. I'm getting married this Saturday, and if you can, I'd love for you to be there.
This is a joke, right?
I pinch the bridge of my nose with my free hand. No, we decided against a big formal ceremony, so we're just inviting a few people. It's going to be at Silver Lake Country Club. You know, over in Orland Park.
Uh-huh. And I'm going on Dancing with the Stars.
Marcia, I'm not joking. There are a few moments of heavy silence. Then,
you're getting married.
Yes, this Saturday.
What the fuck? Are you serious? When did you two meet, and how? What's his name? How come you never mentioned him to me?
It's a long story. We were on and off for a while, and then...
What do you mean, for a while? How long is a while? Weeks? Months?
I wince internally. Months. Definitely months. Technically, this October will mark 2 years since Peter waterboarded me in my kitchen. But in terms of actual time spent together, it's probably closer to 7 or 8 months in total.
Wow. Okay. Just, wow.
Marcia falls silent for a second, then asks in a vaguely hurt tone.
Why didn't you say anything? You know we all thought you were single after... Well, you know.
I know. I'm sorry. Because we were so on and off, I didn't think it was that serious at first. He traveled a lot for work. But now he's done with that, so we decided to go ahead and take the next step.
And the next step is marriage? What happened to just dating and living together?
Sarah, hun.
Her voice takes on a concerned note.
What's going on? Is everything okay?
This is the hard part, because unlike Phil and my new co-workers, Marcia has known me for years. She knows I always look before I leap, and she also knows what happened with Peter. Well, the darker parts of it at least.
Everything is fine.
I put as much cheerfulness into my voice as I can. We're just excited that we can finally be together, and we see no reason to wait. Neither one of us wants a big ceremony, so...
Okay, okay, whoa. Back up the truck. You still haven't told me his name or what he does.
I take a deep breath. Here goes nothing.
His name is Peter Guerin. He used to be a security consultant, but he just retired from that field.
Peter Guerin? Wait a minute. Marcia's voice grows tense. Wasn't that Russian assassin who kidnapped you named Peter something?
Sokolov. And please, let's not go there.
Mostly because I don't want to lie to her any more than I have to.
Anyway, as I was telling you, we're going to have a small wedding this Saturday, and we'd love it if you could attend. But I know you said you have other plans, so if you can't...
Oh, please, Sarah. I'll obviously be there. The fucking bars can wait.
But I'm still confused. Your guy's name is Peter, too? And what kind of name is Guerin? Where is he from?
I drum my fingers on the desk.
He's from kind of all over, but he was born in Eastern Europe. I can't lie about this. Peter's accent, faint though it is, clearly marks him as being from that part of the world.
That must be why he chose a Russian-sounding last name, instead of something like Smith or Johnson.
What?
Marcia sounds on the verge of flipping out.
Where in Eastern Europe?
I squeeze my eyes shut.
Russia?
You're kidding me, right? Tell me you're kidding. I open my eyes to steal a glance at the clock. To my relief, it's almost time for my next patient.
Look, Marcia, I have to run. You'll meet Peter on Saturday and learn all about him, I promise. Now I have to see a patient.
Sarah, wait!
I'll email you all the details tomorrow, I say and hang up, then mute my phone before she can call me back.
4 invites down, a bunch more to go.
I can handle this.
It's not so bad.
Chapter 55. Sarah.
It is that bad, I decide, by the time I get off work, having spoken with Rory, Simon, Andy, Tanya, and my coworkers at the clinic during another fortuitous cancellation. After having essentially the same conversation a dozen times in a row, I'm wiped, and I still have to deal with the big kahuna tonight. Dinner with my parents.
I got it,
Peter told me at breakfast, when I offered to pick up takeout on my way home from the office.
Just come home on time, and don't worry about the thing.
Danny is idling by the curb when I emerge from my building, and I roll my eyes at Peter's overprotectiveness as I get into the car. This morning, the weather was too nice to drive the short distance to my office, so Peter walked me to work. And now I have an escort home as well. At this rate, I'm going to forget what it's like to be on the street by myself. Impulsively, I dial Peter's number.
Hi, Petichka.
His deep voice caresses my ears.
Are you on your way home?
I'm in the car with Danny. I glance at the driver, who's doing a good job of pretending to be deaf and mute as he pulls out onto the street. You already knew that, though, right?
Danny texted me a minute ago. Yes. How was your day, my love?
It was good. I invited pretty much everyone I wanted to invite, and Simon is the only one who won't be able to make it. He's got a family thing in South Carolina.
Very nice.
I hear some kind of clanging noise in the background, followed by running water, and then Peter says,
Hold on one sec. Just have to strain this pasta.
Are you making dinner? I ask, when he picks up the phone again a minute later.
Yes, Italian. Your parents like that, right?
They love it, I say, smiling. I'm sure they'll be very impressed.
You mean once they get over the urge to call the FBI? Yeah, you're probably right. This is coming out pretty tasty.
I burst out laughing, my anxiety over the upcoming dinner transforming into pure giddiness. This is happening. Really, truly happening. Peter and I are becoming a normal couple. How was your day? I ask. What did you do today? What does a former assassin do with his time?
I ran a few errands, picked up some more groceries and such,
Peter says, and I can hear the warm smile in his voice.
I also scoped out a couple of houses in the area for us to take a look at later. I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it yesterday, but this apartment is probably too small for us, especially this kitchen. And if I'm not mistaken, they don't allow pets, right?
Right. It's one of the biggest downsides of this building, I say, my heart tap dancing in my chest. It's happening. Really happening. A life together. House, dog, and all. Tamping down on a spike of giddiness, I say, I chose it because it was close to both my parents and my work, but I wouldn't mind moving a bit farther now that Mom has recovered.
That's what I figured, Peter says. Two of the houses I looked at are close by, and one is about a mile farther from your office. Of course, there's still your old house.
They gave it back to you? I ask, and immediately realize it's a silly question. Peter is no longer a fugitive, so the government has no legal right to keep the property they seized when they learned it belongs to him.
Yes, of course, Peter says. Think about it, and let me know what you want to do with it. Even if we don't want to move back there, we can keep it just in case. Or we can sell it. Your call.
Oh, really? And here I thought you're making all the decisions, I tease. Then realize I'm only partially joking. Once again, Peter has swept into my life like a whirlwind, turning it upside down and wreaking havoc on my peace of mind. His force of will, coupled with his ruthlessness, make it impossible to pretend that I'm in any way in control of my fate, that I have any real say in where our relationship is going. And yet, maybe I do. We're here, instead of hiding out in some remote part of the world, and I'm about to be his wife, not his captive. Even if his methods are heavy-handed, Peter has demonstrated in the clearest way possible that he cares about what I want, that my happiness matters to him.
You mean about the wedding?
Peter asks, taking my teasing at face value.
Because we can still change a few things, if there's something you don't like.
Such as the date? I ask wryly. At the silence on the phone, I say, never mind. I already invited everyone. It's all good.
Good. I'm glad.
There's more clanging in the background, as Peter says.
I'll see you home in a couple of minutes, Petichka. Love you.
Love you too. The words are on the tip of my tongue, yet I find myself saying, see you soon, as I hang up the phone. I'm sure Peter knows how I feel. He's been convinced we belong together from the beginning. But because I've never said the words before, it feels wrong to casually blurt them out. I do love him, though. I can finally admit it to myself, even though nothing's really changed. He's still a killer. Still a monster any sane woman would fear and loathe. But I'm no longer sane, because I love him, and I'm about to marry him. Of my own free will, I'm about to join my life with a man who once tortured and stalked me. Who technically still stalks me, if always having me followed fits that definition.
We're here,
Denny says in a gravelly voice, and I look out the window. Startled to realize that we're already parked by my building, and that the stone-faced driver actually spoke to me. Thank you, I tell him, grabbing my bag, and Danny gives me the slightest of nods as I climb out of the car. Wow. Progress. I was just acknowledged by my driver/bodyguard. The giddiness I'd all but banished returns. At least until I see my parents' car pulling into the parking lot on the other side. They're early. A full 20 minutes early. Frantically, I redial Peter. They're here, I say breathlessly as he picks up. My parents, they're already here.
That's good, he says, unruffled. The food is almost ready. See you in a minute.
Okay, yeah. I hang up and stuff my phone back into the bag. I start to slide the ring off my finger to leave it in the bag as well, but change my mind. There's no point in hiding anything when they'll meet Peter in a minute. Taking a deep breath, I approach my parents' car. Hey, Mom, Dad. Oh, hi, darling. Mom opens the door and climbs out with only minimal stiffness. Are you just coming home from work? Sorry we're a bit early. Your dad thought there might be traffic, so he made me leave with lots of time to spare.
There was supposed to be traffic, according to the GPS.
Dad corrects, and comes around the car to give me a hug. I hug him back, and then kiss Mom on the cheek. It's all good. Dinner is almost ready. Mom grins. It's not takeout? No, afraid not. The man I want you to meet, he's cooking. I look back to see Danny sitting inside the black car, silently guarding us, then turn back to face my parents. There's something I have to tell you, I say carefully. What is it, darling? Mom reaches out to touch my left hand, and her fingers brush against my ring. Instantly, her gaze hones in on the diamond, and her eyes widen to the size of quarters. Sarah, is that... I was just about to get to that, I say as my dad freezes, staring at my left ring finger in disbelief. I have some really good news. You're engaged? Mom tears her gaze away from the shiny rock to gape at me. How? To whom? We weren't even... Mom? Dad? I take each of their hands in one of mine. Please listen to me and try to remain calm. They stay frozen, staring at me deer-like as I say steadily. Peter, the man I love, is back. He's finally succeeded in resolving his misunderstanding with the authorities, and he's no longer wanted for questioning. We can finally be together. And, yes, we just got engaged.
Chapter 56, Peter. I look out the window again, where Sarah is talking to her parents in the parking lot. They've been at it for a solid 8 minutes, and I wish I had a listening device on Sarah so I could hear what they're saying. Judging by the wild gesticulating by all three, emotions are running high. Maybe I should plant a bug with listening capabilities on Sarah. Maybe even a few. One in her phone, one in her bag, and another couple in her favorite footwear. I already track her phone, so I know where she is at all times, but this would give me an additional peace of mind. The table is all set, but I hold off on putting out the food. Finally, the Sarah tracking app on my phone informs me that her phone is in the building and approaching the apartment, so I walk over to open the door for her and her parents. Mom, Dad, this is Peter, she says as the elderly couple come in behind her and stop, eyeing me warily. As I explained, he's made a clean break with his old connections and now goes by the name of Peter Garin. Peter, these are my parents, Lorna and Chuck Wiseman. Pleasure to meet you both, I say, and extend my hand for Sarah's father to shake. Likewise. Despite the polite response, Chuck's voice is as hard as his grip, and his faded blue eyes are sharp as he glowers at me. I shake Lorna's hand next, being careful not to crush her fragile fingers.
You have a lot of explaining to do, Mr. Garin, she says softly, looking up at me, and I smile, seeing shades of Sarah in the elegant lines of her aged face.
Of course, I'm happy to explain everything.
Dinner is ready, so how about we sit down at the table?
Sarah suggests, coming up to stand next to me, and warmth fills my chest as her slender arm slips around my elbow in a proprietary gesture. My Petichka. Finally, she's accepted us as a couple.
Sure. Whatever's cooking smells good, Lorna says, and I smile at her again, realizing that Sarah's mother, at least, is willing to play ball.
When we get to the kitchen, Sarah excuses herself to go to the bathroom, and I set the Caesar salad and the antipasti platter I prepared on the table.
Sarah said you like to cook,
Lorna says, watching me move around the kitchen, and I nod, taking a seat across from her. It's a hobby of mine. I find it very soothing.
Hobby, huh? Chuck's glower deepens.
What's your occupation, then? We've never been able to get a straight answer from Sarah.
I've done a couple of different things, but most recently, I worked as a security consultant and had a business along those lines.
I say and stand up. Picking up the salad tongs, I look at Lorna.
Salad?
She nods regally.
Please.
I lean over the table and place a sizable portion of salad on her plate, then look at Chuck.
None for me, thanks.
He spears a marinated artichoke with his fork and transfers it from the antipasti platter on his plate, eyeing me balefully the whole time.
What kind of business? He demands as soon as I sit back down.
Sarah said you were a contractor of some kind. Was that the security consulting business? Who were your clients, and how does all this tie into your recent troubles with the law?
I suppress the urge to smile. The old man doesn't pull his punches.
My background is Spetsnaz, the Russian Special Forces, I say, deciding I can disclose that much. After I left the military, I traveled all over the world and consulted for a number of organizations and individuals who had reasons to be concerned about security. I can't tell you the specifics of what got me in trouble, as that's classified, but I can assure you that it's all resolved now.
Resolved how?
Lorna asks, as Sarah returns to the kitchen, and I smile as my Petichka takes a seat next to me and eagerly reaches for the salad. I made a deal with the authorities that was advantageous for both sides. I say, as Sarah begins eating, apparently content to let me field her parents' questions. So now I have a new last name and a clean slate, and Sarah and I can finally get married.
A clean slate from what? Sarah's father asks, his nostrils flaring.
I heard people had been killed. I can't tell you anything more than what you already know, I'm afraid. I place some salad on my own plate. It's part of the deal I made. Chuck's face reddens, and for a moment, I'm convinced he's going to stab me with his fork. However, he must be more civilized than I am, because the only thing he spears is a juicy green olive from the antipasti platter.
Mr. Garn, Lorna says, putting down her fork, I hope you...
Please, call me Peter. We're about to be family. Her carefully painted mouth tightens slightly.
Okay, Peter, I hope you understand that we have a lot of concerns, both about your background and your connections, not to mention the fact that Sarah disappeared for 5 months after the two of you, well, started dating,
Sarah helpfully suggests, and her mother frowns at her.
Right, started dating.
Lorna turns her attention back to me, and I recognize the backbone of steel within her. It's the same one her daughter possesses, the one that has enabled my Petichka to handle the kind of trauma that would have destroyed a weaker person.
Listen to me, Peter.
Sarah's mother leans forward, and though her voice remains soft, her gaze is as sharp as her husband's.
You might have resolved your misunderstanding with the authorities, but we're not convinced you're not a danger to our daughter. We don't know anything about you, and what we do know is, frankly, quite unsettling. Sarah says that the two of you are in love and that she went with you of her own accord, but we have serious doubts about that. You are not the kind of man our Sarah would ever... Mom, please.
Sarah pushes aside her plate.
I told you over and over again that Peter is not what you...
Your parents are right, Petichka. I cover her hand with my palm and squeeze lightly, then turn to look at her mother. Mrs. Wiseman, I say, using the formal address to show my respect, I completely understand your reservations. If I were you, I'd be just as concerned because you're absolutely right. Your daughter and I come from different worlds. Lorna and Chuck stare at me, obviously taken aback, and I use the moment to prepare what I'm going to say. I have to be very careful here, walk a fine line between letting them feel like they know me and terrifying them out of their minds. I decide to start at the beginning. I grew up in an orphanage in Russia, I say. I have no idea who my parents were, but I'm almost certain they were nothing like the two of you. Most likely, my mother was a teenager who found herself pregnant, but that's pure speculation on my part. All I know is that I was left on the doorway of the orphanage where I was maybe a few days old. Sierra covers our joined hands with her free one, silently lending me her support as I continue. It wasn't a great place to grow up, and as a youth, I was perpetually in trouble, I say as the Wisemans continue to stare at me. However, when I was 17, I got recruited into a special counterterrorism unit of Spetsnaz, which is where I served my country for a number of years. He was really good at that, Sarah interjects, sounding as proud as any fiancé. At 21, he was already head of his team. I smile at her, the warmth in my chest intensifying even though I know she's just putting on a show for her parents. Sarah knows what I did as part of that unit, and I doubt she's truly proud of how many terrorists and radical insurgents I caught and tortured for my country. Still, it feels good to have her approval, fake though it might be. That is impressive, Lorna says, and I turn to see her and Chuck regarding me with a slight lessening of hostility. Thank you, I say and smile at them. I was good, thanks partially to my misspent youth. So why did you leave then? Chuck asks, reaching over to spear another olive. How did you end up here? My mood darkens, the warmth inside me dissipating despite Sarah's continued gentle touch. I didn't know if I would go there, if I could bring myself to go there, but I see now that I have to, that if I omit this important part, the Wisemans will sense it, and I'll lose a chance to gain their trust. A few years into my service, work brought me to a small mountain village in Dagestan, where I met the young woman, I say evenly, pulling my hand out of Sarah's hold. She became pregnant, and we got married. Lorna's eyes widen. You have a child? Had, I say, and despite my best efforts, the word comes out harsh, almost bitter. Pasha, my son, and Tamila, my wife, were killed 7 years ago. Darjevo, the village where they lived, was mistakenly thought to be harboring terrorists, and dozens of innocents were killed in a NATO-led strike. Sarah's parents gape at me, their faces pale and eyes full of disbelief. I don't understand, Chuck says after a long, heavy moment. How could something like that happen? And wouldn't that kind of horrible error have been all over the news? What you're saying is... He shakes his head and reaches for a glass of water with an unsteady hand. It's hard to believe, I know, Dad, Sarah says. But I can tell you that it's true. I saw the pictures with my own eyes. It happened, and it was horrible. Lorna stares at her daughter, then turns to me. I'm so sorry, Peter. Her voice softens further at whatever she must see on my face. How old was your son? He would have been 3 the following month. A surge of anguish chokes me, and I stand up, unable to look at Sarah's parents. Walking over to the stove, I pick up the pot of pasta and return with it to the table, using the time to compose myself. I hope you like this kind of marinara sauce, I say in a calmer tone, putting a solid portion of the sauce-covered linguine onto Sarah's plate before doing the same for her parents. It's a little different from what you'd buy at the store. Sarah's mother winds her fork in the linguine and takes a bite, then gives me a tremulous smile.
It's very good, Peter. Thank you.
You're welcome. I feel Sarah's delicate hand on my knee, squeezing lightly, and when I look at her, I see that her hazel eyes are much too bright. She doesn't say anything, but the elusive warmth returns, thawing the icy block that formed inside me at the recollections. Sarah's father pointedly clears his throat.
So, how did you end up here then? After, you know.
I take a breath. This is where I had to be careful not to disclose too much. There was an investigation, I say, meeting Chuck's gaze. One that resulted in the guilty being officially absolved of blame and the whole incident being dismissed as one of those things that happen in that part of the world. I didn't accept that outcome, and since my superiors were complicit in the cover-up, I left my job. I then traveled the world working as a security consultant, and eventually I ended up in Chicago, where I met your daughter.
How did you end up in trouble with the authorities, then?
Lorna asks, eyeing me with wariness tinged with a touch of sympathy.
Did it have something to do with what happened to your family?
I'm afraid I can't tell you that. As I mentioned before, it's classified. I pause, letting them draw their own conclusions, and when no more questions are immediately thrown at me, I look them both in the eye and say quietly, Lorna, Chuck, I hope I can call you that. At Lorna's nod, I continue. I can't lie to you about the kind of man I am. I didn't grow up in a nice neighborhood, and I didn't go to school to be a doctor or a lawyer. I'm a soldier by training and inclination, and I've seen and done things you most likely can't imagine. But I do love your daughter. I love her with everything I am. She's the only person who matters to me in the world, and I would do anything for her. Turning to Sarah, I gather her hand in mine and say with complete truthfulness, I would give my life to make her happy.
Chapter 57 Sarah.
I have no idea how I thought the dinner would go. But the last thing I expected was for Peter to bare his soul to my parents, to disarm them with sincerity, instead of squashing their objections with arrogance and veiled threats. All through the rest of the dinner, he's polite and respectful, answering their questions with enough detail that when he does gloss over something, it still sounds like the complete truth. Where did we meet? In a club in Chicago. Was he already a fugitive? Yes. Why did we date in secret? Because of said status as fugitive, which he didn't inform me about until I was already on the plane with him. Why didn't I come home for 5 months? Because the authorities discovered where he was, and that was the only way for us to be together. What is he planning to do now? Still deciding, but he has enough money for both of us to live on for the rest of our lives. How did he acquire so much money? Through his consulting business. And, yes, the specifics of that are classified, too. At first, I just listen, but when I better understand his strategy, I pitch in with my own answers, carefully following Peter's lead. By the time we get to dessert, bowls of fresh berries topped with homemade tiramisu, my parents appear, if not exactly comfortable with our relationship, then at least more accepting. It's certainly better than their panicked reaction when I informed them about our engagement in the parking lot. They were on the verge of calling the FBI when I told them our wedding is this coming Saturday, and it took everything I had to convince them to go up and actually meet Peter for themselves. I still don't understand why you're rushing into marriage, Mom says, sipping her chamomile tea, and I hide a smile at the resignation in her tone. At least the topic now is the speed of the wedding, not how dangerous Peter is, or whether we should be together at all.
That's my initiative, I'm afraid.
Peter says, and gives my mom a smile so charming, I'm surprised she doesn't melt on the spot.
I've missed your daughter so much that I proposed as soon as we were back together. Life is just too short, you see. When you find the right one, you have to hold on to her. And I know Sarah and I are right for each other. Besides,
he glances at me, his gaze heating up.
I'd like us to start a family soon.
My dad nearly knocks over his coffee cup.
You what?
Peter hands him a napkin.
I'd like us to have children,
he says calmly, as my dad mops up the spill.
A little girl and a boy, or whatever fate has in store for us.
I blush, as Mom's gaze instantly zeroes in on my belly. Sarah, darling, you're not... No, of course not. I can feel my face reddening further, as Mom lifts her eyebrows disbelievingly. It's too soon. Peter's just returned. But you're already trying? Mom asks, a gleeful grin spreading over her face. And to my shock, I realize she's happy about this development. The primal urge to have grandkids must outweigh her remaining concerns about Peter. Dad, on the other hand, looks as uncomfortable as I feel.
Lorna, please. This is none of our business. As soon as a baby is on the way, you'll be the first to know.
Peter promises my mom, and she shocks me again by nodding conspiratorially. Thank you. Lowering her voice, she leans in toward my former kidnapper. I thought it wouldn't happen in our lifetime. My face must match the color of the raspberries in my bowl, but my dad appears intrigued. I guess it just occurred to him that all of this, from the unexpected return of my no longer criminal lover to our hasty engagement, bodes well for something he's been hinting at ever since my wedding to George. Like Mom, he wants grandkids, but given his advanced age, he'd all but given up hope he'd see any. On my end, I'm still rather terrified by the idea, but now was not the time to express those doubts. Besides, I remember how I felt when I got that late period, how the disappointment was so intense, it was almost like grief. Maybe I do want a child with Peter, even though the rational part of me is screaming that we should wait and see how this all unfolds. Whether I can really build a normal life with a ruthless killer. As we finish up dessert, Peter discusses the details of the upcoming wedding with my parents, considerately asking them about their officiant preferences and how many people they'd like to invite themselves. I listen bemusedly as the three of them settle on a local judge my dad knows, and my parents express a desire to invite the Levinsons, along with a few more of their friends, something Peter very much supports.
On my end, I'm only going to have three friends, he says, undoubtedly referring to his Russian teammates,
and that seems to calm my parents a bit more. Probably because the fact that he has friends further humanizes him in their eyes. When we finish, Peter starts clearing the table as my parents get ready to head home. Thank you, that was delicious, Mom tells him.
Yes, thanks,
Dad echoes grudgingly as my fiancé smiles at them.
It was my pleasure. We hope to see you again soon,
he says, and I put on my shoes to walk my parents down to their car. Well, that was not what I expected, Mom says, as the elevator doors slide shut. He's interesting, this Peter of yours. I grin at her. You mean gorgeous and domesticated? Yes, I agree. Dad snorts.
If that man is domesticated, I'll eat my foot. A savage, that one. Without a doubt.
Chuck! Mom frowns at him.
Didn't you see the way he looked at her?
Dad retorts, as the elevator doors open on the first floor.
I'm surprised he didn't club her over the head and drag her off to bed in front of us.
Dad, please! The blush that had just left my face returns, magnified tenfold. That's not... Well, of course I saw that, Mom says, as though I'm not there. That's not necessarily a bad thing, though.
It is when you're dealing with a man like that.
Dad glances over his shoulder, as though Peter might be listening. Which, knowing his stalker tendencies, he might very well be. For all I know, there are already cameras in the building, and who knows what planted on me. I don't think he's as bad as that, Mom says, as we pass a couple of neighbors in the lobby. I mean, yes, he's not your average Joe or Harry, but
He's dangerous,
Dad says flatly.
Don't fool yourself. Just because the man wants a family doesn't mean he's not capable of things that would make your eyelashes curl. What he's told us today is just the tip of the iceberg. Believe me.
Oh, I believe you, Mom says, as we exit into the parking lot. But I think he does love her, and if all those problems with the FBI are really over... Maybe you guys want to wait 2 minutes, so you can discuss me in third person when I'm not there, I suggest, trailing behind them. Otherwise, I can head back up and... No, no, darling. Mom stops and turns around, giving me an apologetic look. Sorry, we're just trying to come to terms with it all, you understand? I do, Mom. I smile and lean in to kiss her soft cheek. I was just kidding. I know this will take some adjustment.
Sarah, darling.
Dad touches my shoulder, and when I face him, he says quietly,
Just promise us one thing.
What is it?
If he ever hurts you, or scares you, or does anything else that worries you, come to us. Don't hide it, or try to deal with it on your own, okay?
Dad's gaze is as hard as I've ever seen it.
I know you're in love with this man. I see it. But tigers don't change their stripes. He's dangerous. Maybe not to you, but to everyone else. I see it in his eyes.
Dad!
No, listen to me, Sarah. Even if he doesn't bring the horrors of his past into your life, something I doubt very much, he's not going to be like George, content to remain on the fringes of your life. He's not that kind of man. You understand?
I do. I understand better than my dad can imagine, because I know exactly what kind of man Peter is. With George, even when I was part of a couple, I was able to remain my own person, to maintain that little bit of mental distance necessary to protect myself. But Peter is too dominating, too controlling to allow that. I'm going to be his in every sense of the word. And my dad intuitively grasps that. Chuck, Mom lays her hand on Dad's arm. Come, we should go.
Promise me,
Dad insists, not budging, so I nod and smile. I promise, Dad. If anything happens, I'll come to you. Dad nods, satisfied, and we walk together to their car. As I kiss and hug them goodbye, I notice Danny still sitting in his dark car, and I smile. Looking up at the lit-up window of my kitchen. For all their warnings and admonishments, my parents have no idea just how dangerous and controlling my fiancé truly is. I lied when I made that promise to Dad. There's no way I can come to them with Peter-related concerns, because there's nothing they, or anyone, can do. The monster I've grown to love is in my life for good, and I have to figure out how to live with him. Chapter 58. Sarah. I go to work on Friday as usual, but I end up spending every minute between patients, fielding my coworkers' questions about my upcoming wedding. To avoid sounding as ignorant about the event as I actually am, I tell them we want the details to be a surprise, and leave it at that. They'll see the flowers, the cake, and the dress tomorrow. My parents keep calling as well. Asking about all sorts of minutiae that I can't answer. I give them Peter's number, as he's the official wedding planner, but my mom still calls every hour with some kind of question or concern. I suspect it's because they're afraid I'll disappear again, so I try to be patient, but by the fifth call, it's all I can do to bring myself to pick up the phone and explain yet again that I have no clue if there will be chairs or benches at the ceremony. It's a busy day at work, too. With a twin pregnancy C-section scheduled this afternoon, which means I barely have time to get lunch before I have to head over to the hospital to perform the procedure. To speed up matters, I grab a sandwich from a convenience store and consume it in the car. One perk of having a driver is having both of my hands free for eating. The patient has already been given the epidural by the time I get to the operating room, and after I examine her, I perform the procedure right away. As she's starting to dilate, and one of the twins is positioned the wrong way. The mom-to-be frets the entire time, She's in her early 40s and wasn't able to conceive until her 6th IVF cycle. And when I place the 2 tiny but perfectly healthy boys in her arms, her face lights up with such joy that I have to blink away a few tears. "Thank you, Dr. Kobakis," she says fervently, as the nurses take the babies for their tests. "Thank you so much for everything." "It was my pleasure, believe me," I tell her, as I check her bandages one last time and jot down some notes in her chart. Some pain and bleeding is expected after the procedure, but if you start to run a fever or are in severe pain, call me, okay? I give her a strict look. I mean it, any time, day or night. "Will do. You're so kind." Her teary-eyed smile is exhausted, but full of joy. "Is it true what I overheard from the nurses? You're getting married this weekend." Rumors certainly travel fast. Stifling a sigh, I say, "Yes, I am. But you can still call me if anything. I'll be around, okay?" "Oh, thank you. And congratulations. I'm sure you'll be a beautiful bride." She beams at me, and I smile back, enjoying the uncomplicated interaction. Unlike everyone else in my life, this woman doesn't know that this wedding is coming out of nowhere, or that I'm marrying a man most of my friends haven't met. "Get some rest and enjoy your sons," I tell the new mom, and then I head back to the office to wrap up the day. Maybe Peter has the right idea about not dragging this out any longer than we have to. With any luck, the wedding madness will be over by Monday, and then things will return to normal. Or at least, as normal as they can be, when you're married to the man who once kidnapped you.
Chapter 59, Peter. I give Danny an evening off and pick up Sarah myself, too eager to see her to wait the extra few minutes necessary for her to get home. I'm glad she's neither volunteering at the clinic tonight nor has a performance, because even the hours she spends at work are too much time apart for me. I need her with me, always. She comes out of her office building, her hazel eyes searching the street, looking for Danny, no doubt, when I open the car door and step out. Her gaze immediately swings to me, and a smile lights her pretty face as she heads my way. It's a warm summer day, and she's wearing a sleeveless gray dress that hugs her ballerina-like frame. Her shiny chestnut waves bounce around her slender shoulders as she walks, and I'm again reminded of the 50s Hollywood starlet transplanted into modern times. My beautiful Ptichka. I can't fucking wait until she's my wife.
"Hi," she says breathlessly, stopping in front of me. "Did you get a new car? I didn't know that was..."
I catch her face between my palms and slant my mouth across hers, kissing her deeply. I can't help myself. I crave everything about her, from the sweetness of her scent to the way her slim body arches against mine, her hands clutching helplessly at my biceps. I want to devour that sweetness, drink it in until I quench this raging thirst, though I know there's no quenching it. I'm going to crave her until the day I die. Becoming aware of some irritating giggling, I lift my head and pin the offenders, a pair of teenage girls standing a dozen feet away, with a harsh glare. They skitter away instantly, their faces paling under the heavy layer of their makeup, and I turn my attention back to Sarah, who's blinking up at me, her soft lips swollen and rosy from the kiss. "Hi, Ptichka." Fighting the urge to reclaim those lips, I lower my hands to her shoulders, squeezing gently. "How was your day?"
"It was good."
She still sounds a bit out of breath.
"How about you?"
"Also good. I got this new car for us." I nod toward the black Mercedes S560 behind me. At first glance, it looks like any other luxury sedan. A closer inspection, however, would reveal that the windows are made of bulletproof glass and that the metal frame is unusually sturdy. It cost me a pretty penny, but it's worth it. I'm not expecting anyone to shoot at us, but one never knows. Plus, this car is pretty much indestructible in a crash, something that's very important to me after what happened with Sarah in Cyprus.
Nice, she says, even as a tiny frown forms between her eyebrows. What about my old Toyota?
I sold it.